The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast,
foretold in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the sultry heartland of America, I'm Derek Gilbert.
Sultry, eh?
Yes, I knew you'd catch that reference.
I don't know, it was a hot, moist...
sultry.
In case you haven't seen it, it's Throw Mama from the Train. Welcome, everybody, to our humble bunker. Sam just looked up and like a beat. Hey, I knew that one.
Today is the 17th of July, 2013, and, another interesting day in the world at large. Maybe not in terms of big news, but lots of little things under the radar, perhaps. And that's what we hope to uncover and...
Well, I think for the most part on social media, you're still seeing the story out of Florida, but
yep.
We're not going to go into that anymore. You won't hear that on this show.
Already passed.
Lots
that.
Of other things. So last year, lots of things going on in the world, and I think one of the most interesting things going on in the world right now is this story out of Panama, how the president of Panama tweeted a picture of a ship, of the cargo, the hidden cargo, hidden in sugar, mind you. In a ship that was bound for North Korea heading through the Panama Canal, and it was a ship that apparently the world has been keeping an eye on. Interpol has been interested in exactly where this ship docks, and when they boarded expecting to find drugs, instead they found missiles and all sorts of chicanery. And originally it was they didn't really know where the missiles were coming from. A picture, sort of a green, misty picture that looked like from a sci-fi movie, was tweeted by the president. And they've since found out that they came from Cuba.
Oh, interesting.
They were sending the Cuban missiles. It was not a crisis, mind you. Not yet. It was going to North Korea to be repaired.
Interesting.
Yeah. Considering that North Korea has nuclear capabilities.
Very interesting, right.
And they're actually, I think it's kind of ironic that they're repairing the missile, because the missile tests that they have been, you know, having in Cuba and North Korea for the last decade or so don't always go as intended.
That's very true. So would this be broiled chicanery or extra crispy?
I think it's extra crispy with side of fries. Mm-hmm. Or plantain.
The question is, is this the work of Kim Jong-un? Is he trying to show that he is too a grown-up, or is this the work of someone else inside the inner circle?
You know, that's a really good question. You and I were talking about that at lunchtime when you called me, and, you know, we should really record our noontime conversations because they're generally not unlike this right here, with the difference that Sam isn't staring. Oh, he's fallen asleep.
Yeah. And sometimes you'll hear the background noise of whatever, you know, fast food restaurant I'm taking
lunch.
Well,
and today I truly did. But we were talking about that, and one of the questions I asked you was, is it possible that it is his aunt? And while you are sitting there, I'm going to do so. I only have my iPad in front of me. My computer is not fully charged, so I didn't want to bring it in here off the charger. But what I read a few weeks back was that, in fact, may have been a couple of months, apparently his aunt has been very, a take charge kind of gal.
Domineering?
Domineering is a good word. She often is seen wearing military dress, and she's a small woman, but she packs a punch, apparently.
Huh.
So I don't know who, honestly, I don't know who is in charge, if it's Kim Jong-un. Or perhaps his aunt, or perhaps an inner circle of generals. I honestly don't know.
Well, that's some stories that have been floating around now for several months, that Kim Jong-un's aunt and uncle, Aunt Kim Kyung-hu, and her husband Jang Song-thaek, may be the true power behind the throne, as it were.
You know, it's odd that that's what's going on in North Korea, because the truth is, in Cuba, is it Raul who's still running things there?
Raul Castro, yeah.
Well, he's not a whole lot younger than Fidel.
No.
And, you know, you have to wonder exactly what is going to happen in the next few years in Cuba. So I think that I would stake my prognosticating powers, so to speak, and just logic, that I'd say in the next few years we're going to see a little power vacuum there, where someone, some strong man or a woman, probably not a woman in Cuba, but some strong person steps in and takes over, and again has to make a name for himself or herself.
Hmm.
You know, Cuban missiles, they ring in a way that echoes down into the past, that those in our generation,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, you were a little young in 1962 to remember that. In fact, you were only a few months old.
Yeah, I was still in nappies.
Yeah, but I remember being an old cantankerous woman that I am. I remember the missiles of October. And they weren't a whole lot of fun to go through. In fact, the nation as a whole were huddled by our television sets waiting to find out whether or not we were going to be blown up.
Yeah, that had to be a really tense time.
It was.
And you'd have to imagine that there were people in Washington who were phoning families at home saying, get out of the city.
This was a time when we had three major networks, didn't have the internet, really didn't have a whole lot of speedy communication in any way. You know, so you were dependent upon what you heard on the radio or on television, primarily mm-hmm. on television. We were soaking in all sorts of propaganda at the time. We were terrified of, I grew up very close to the JPG, the Jefferson Proving Ground, where, you know, military ammunition ordnance was tested. And that included bombing, you know, bombs that were tested. We were convinced that we were going to be eradicated from the map at any moment, because mm-hmm. in school we were constantly told by the teachers, now you understand that we live very close to a military installation,
mm-hmm.
and that is a primary target. They want to remove all of that ammunition from the game, so to speak, from the war game.
Yeah.
And so as little kids, I remember sitting there in my little starched pinafore dress thinking, I'm going to die.
Yeah, sleep tight, kiddies.
Yeah. I prayed a lot, I got to tell you. As a little kid, I used to ask the Lord, okay, are we all going to die tonight? Is the missile hitting us tonight?
Mm-hmm. No, I'm 10 years younger, and I remember in my elementary school in Chicago seeing the signs, you know, those yellow and black signs with the three triangles mm-hmm. on it saying radiation shelter, pointing you to
yes.
a spot in the school that was supposed to protect us in the event of something. But I don't recall that we ever had any drills. I mean, by the time I was, it would have been 72 by the time I was the same age you were during mm-hmm. the Cuban Missile Crisis. And by then we were normalizing relations with China. So it wasn't quite the same world, even 10 years later than what you experienced back in 62.
No, and the fact is that in 1963, when Kennedy was killed, you can almost consider that a demarcation year.
Mm-hmm.
The world changed radically at that point.
In a sense, the blinders came off for many.
Yeah, for some, it took a while.
Yeah.
It took a while for them to come off. The Johnson years started out okay, but they got to be pretty bad, and he was not a highly favored president by the end, and he knew it.
Which is why he declined to run. Mm-hmm. He knew that he wasn't even going to win the nomination against Bobby Kennedy.
Oh, yeah, we were blaming him for Vietnam.
Right. And isn't it funny how now, in retrospect, people look at Vietnam as Nixon's war?
Yeah, yeah. But the truth is that Nixon inherited it. He truly
did. It was Johnson's war.
Yeah. Well, the truth is that, yes, Johnson really started that war. I mean, the French were in there as advisors
right.
in the late 50s to early 60s. Mm-hmm. Kennedy was told, we have to go in. We have to do more than advise. We have to do boots on the ground.
Right.
We have to do flyovers. He didn't want to. And Johnson, well, there are some who say that he profited because Lady Bird had shares in, was it Bell Helicopter? Anyway, a helicopter company, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, that he stood to gain financially through the war.
Yeah, Bell Helicopter.
Imagine that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. War is a racket, going back to General Smedley Butler.
Don't. He'll just come in the door and he's dead. we know these things. People drop in at the people are always stopping by the bunker, dead, alive, you know, cartoon.
Well, didn't get that one pulled yet.
Rats.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we can find it later and drop it in there anyway. You never know.
And I forgot which one we were talking about.
It was Mr. Burns.
Oh, right.
I am love.
That's right.
I'm love.
Which leads to our next topic, which is a...
Don't you like that segue?
Yeah, it was...
Going from war to love.
Yes. From the sublime to the ridiculous in this case. Maybe not really a big story, but there's some folks on the web who have picked this up, and it's crossed the radar, including Jackie Alnor, who I have a lot of respect for.
Yeah.
Jackie posted this, and that's how I saw this. It claims to be a new Bible version called the Religion Free Bible, which is the product of a fella who, let's see if I can bring this up here really quickly while I'm talking, because I'm working off my tablet too.
It's tablet night.
Yes. It's a new translation that the fellow who's done, it's not really a translation, it's a paraphrase. But it's not really clear from the website whether this is even complete.
I'm not sure it's even a paraphrase. I think it's a pick and choose.
A product of imagination. It essentially recasts the Bible, and recasts God and Jesus as sort of the Mr. Burns character from that Simpsons episode. Jesus, I am love, and you're good, and everything is wonderful. And some of these... there are some excerpts that have been posted to the website at religionfreebible.com. For example, John 3:16 in this new paraphrase edition translates as this: love gives. Love is what brought me into this world. I am a gift offered in love. Love desires your freedom. Love desires your wholeness. Love wants you to know yourself as complete. And on and on and on. Essentially, when you read through this enough, you get the gist of it. And the gist is that you're good, God's not judgmental, and you can experience God by just you being you and accepting you as you. And essentially what it is God is you.
There it is!
Oh, homie, I'm so sorry I doubted you.
So,
sorry, that's where I cut off.
That's the clip. It's the X-Files episode from The Simpsons.
See, my iPad can even do the drop.
Sweet. So anyway, I don't really expect much to come of this because, again, it appears to be the work of a fellow who self-published his last novel, we think.
Well, you know, I read a little bit of it. Sorry to jump in, but I did read just a little bit. You can go to Amazon and actually look in the book.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. You can actually read a lot of the book there at Amazon.
Oh, okay.
In the introduction, he says that the book previous to this one, Jesus in
Nashville.
Nashville, mm-hmm. Yes, indeed, where he pitched the idea of being Jesus for a year, you know, ditching the idea of Christianity and just being Jesus for a year there in Nashville. He pitched it to various publishers, and according to his introduction, it was picked up by Zondervan, and it was actually published by iUniverse, so, which is a
self-publishing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm not really sure what happened with Zondervan, but I'm guessing that they took a look at it and said, no.
Yeah, this is a little too weird even for Zondervan, and Zondervan's not always on the mark in our view. But yeah. So anyway, the Religion-Free Bible, I wouldn't sweat too much about it. I mean, as Christians, we should really expect this sort of thing. The world hated Jesus first. Why should we expect better treatment?
So, that is exactly right. Yeah.
Well, an interesting story. This one caught my eye because we've talked to Peter Lavenda a couple of times.
Oh, this one, yes.
Yeah, I even had him on the radio show in Columbia, Missouri, mm-hmm. a couple of times, which was kind of neat, being able to get him onto mainstream radio during the day. I mean, he's been on Coast to Coast AM a number of times, has talked to Ian Punnett a couple of times.
No one knew he was awake during the day.
Yeah. He, in researching the book that he called Unholy Alliance, which was an exploration of the belief systems of the Nazis And he came to the conclusion upon, you know, with his research that the Nazi Party was not really a political movement. It was a cult. It was just flat a cult. He went down to Chile and a settlement there called Colonia Dignidad, which I know is not the correct pronunciation, but that's as close as I'm going to come.
I think it's Dignidad.
Probably. It was founded by a man named Paul Schaefer, who was a former, in air quotes, of course, Nazi.
Not the Saturday Night Live.
Not Paul the Schaefer. Saturday Night Live musical leader, no. Paul Schaefer, who apparently, and this was news today as I started digging into the story a little bit, a follower of the 1940s and 50s, 40s, 50s, 60s, faith-healing preacher William Branham, who is sometimes credited, and I think incorrectly, of being the founder of the Latter Rain movement. But there are those who were inspired by Branham and then developed the Latter Rain teachings, and we can go into that a little bit maybe. But anyway, the government of Chile has filed papers to extradite a gentleman named Harmut Hopp, who is a doctor who fled Colonia Dignidad in 2011 and went back to Germany after he was convicted as an accomplice in the sexual abuse of minors in the 1990s in Colonia Dignidad. Essentially, it was a Nazi enclave in Chile. Peter Lavenda went there to investigate because 22 people, political opponents of the Chilean dictator Augusto Pinochet, disappeared, and it's believed that they were tortured and killed at the cult's compound during the reign of Pinochet.
This was in the 40s, 50s?
No, this would have been Pinochet.
60s? I'll look it up. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Continue.
So anyway, this cult was raided. The settlement essentially disbanded about 10, 12 years ago. Paul Schaefer died a few years back. But we will see what happens with Harmut Hopp. The ripples from that particular incident still kind of rippling out across the pond there. Branham had some odd teachings. He and his teachings, while well,
he was dictator from 1973 till 1981.
Okay,
I think,
and was supported by, if not the United States government, at least elements within the United States government.
1990. Okay. It all depends on what you define as still president.
Yeah. Branham, if he didn't found the Latter Rain movement, at least was a major influence on it. He was a self-proclaimed prophet, and based on his teachings from the book of Joel, Joel chapter 2, the Latter Rain movement drew many of its teachings. He proclaimed himself the angel of Revelation 3:14 and Revelation 10:7, and prophesied that by 1977, all denominations would be consumed by the World Council of Churches under the control of Roman Catholics. Obviously, he missed that prophecy just a little bit.
This oh,
is
yeah.
William Branham. And the reason I mentioned Branham again is that the founder of this this colony in Chile, Paul Schaefer, was apparently a follower of William Branham.
That's just creepy.
Yeah.
Did we ever figure out if Branham was a cousin to my ancestor?
You don't have no clue. There was
same
a distant ancestor.
Same area? They were from sort of the same area,
no,
weren't
no.
they?
Branham's from around Louisville.
Oh, I thought he actually was born in eastern Kentucky.
No, he's from around Louisville.
Okay, well, yeah. that makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah, he believed that the gospel, the word of God, was given in three forms. The scriptures, of course, but then also the pyramids and the zodiac. And he said that anyone belonging to any denomination had already taken the mark of the beast. So, yeah, Branham was way off base.
Except for his denomination.
Well, he didn't have a specific denomination, but yeah, if you followed anyone else, apparently.
10s, 20s,
30s. Those were his denominations, yes.
So, 30s. Yeah, those are good ones.
Kind of an interesting development. And speaking of cults, there's another story here, which is just weird enough that we need to talk about it. The state of Florida is having a problem with an invasive species. It's been identified as one of the 100 most dangerous invasive species on planet Earth, the giant African land snail, because it was introduced to Florida by a follower of the religious cult based on the traditional African religion Ifa Orisha.
Okay.
Yes. A woman smuggled the creatures into Miami underneath her dress. Authorities said that Charles Stewart, the leader of the cult, persuaded his followers to drink the snail's mucus as part of a healing ritual. And Stewart has blamed the resulting uproar over the snails on jealousy from the practitioners of Santeria in the Miami area. The problem, apparently, with the giant African land snail is that besides being very prolific breeders and eating up lots and lots of vegetation in Florida, they also carry with it a parasitic nematode, which can cause serious meningitis in humans.
Oh, that's bad.
So, you know, any healing ritual that involves consuming mucus that might contain parasitic nematodes, I would vote against that. But again, that's the Isha. I lost the page again. And to be honest, this is the first time I've even heard of this cult. But because of this this cult leader, Charles Stewart and Ifa Orisha, Florida has apparently been invaded by giant African land snails.
You know, honestly, that's not a headline that I expected to wake up to.
No.
Trying to find the drop that I wanted to put in there, but I couldn't find it fast enough.
Well, that's perhaps just as well.
Oh,
was it a good drop?
It was a really good one. I just can't find it. Let me see if I can find it here.
I can edit this later, of course.
Yep, if I can find it later. Yeah, but we've got a racing snake.
Yeah, we'll splice that in. But yeah, that was not a headline I expected to run into today either.
Sam, did you expect to see that this morning? He's
already
this
asleep.
Attitude of leave me alone, leave me out of this. I've got a question for you.
Yes.
Do you think that there are alien probes orbiting our planet?
No, I don't.
Well, see if I can find the article. Researchers from Edinburgh University analyzed how a fleet of probes could travel through space. The alien probes would only need to travel one-tenth of the speed of light in order to explore every part of our galaxy. These mathematicians warn that alien probes are so high-tech, we probably can't see them.
I see.
In fact.
I mean, I don't see. Yes.
In fact, let me see here where it says. They says here that the probes would self-replicate and build new versions of themselves from dust and gas while traveling through space. So they could be in our solar system already, but we wouldn't know because they are invisible.
I see.
This is University of Edinburgh. They've got all sorts of drawings and equations to prove this.
So it must be true.
They're talking
about... Were they wearing white coats when they wrote this?
They may have been. I give my speeches.
Then we know it's true.
Exactly. The thing that the probes can use is called the slingshot maneuver. And if you've ever watched Star Trek,
yes,
you know this works. In fact, it may actually take them back
in
time.
Mm-hmm.
But they slingshot around stars. In fact, assuming we actually got there, we slingshotted around the moon to get back home.
Yes.
And to
Apollo
catch up.
13.
Well, and also to catch up with the Armageddon.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Armageddon meteor that was coming straight for Earth.
Roadrunner and Coyote slingshot around the moon. There's your drop.
Yeah, just as real.
Well, I bet you didn't know that was going to be in the news this morning either.
I didn't.
So I see your snails and raise you
invisible
one
alien
invisible
probes.
Exactly.
That could explain the pain in my back.
I didn't want to say anything this morning, honey. I just didn't. And we won't even. I won't.
Actual university professors are getting paid. Or getting grants.
Yes, that's the problem. They're getting grants to do this.
Is it? You have to wonder. I mean, was that actually in a peer-reviewed paper?
Let me find where it actually links.
Because one of the things
article.
That The scientific establishment keeps using as a weapon to bludgeon people who believe in creation is that there are no peer-reviewed studies, and unless you get peer review, it seems like it doesn't count.
In a paper from 2011, Jakob Hoek-Mizra of the Rock Ethics Institute. Now, I wasn't aware that rocks had ethics. I'm assuming it's the name, named after someone. He wrote that alien artifacts might already exist in our solar system without us knowing, simply because we haven't looked for them hard enough.
Uh-huh.
Trying to see if this actually links to a peer-reviewed paper. Scottish mathematicians draw on NASA space expert Robert Freitas's idea from 1983 that supposes that alien probes had been designed to appear invisible to us. And I can't find a peer-reviewed thing in here anywhere.
Well,
there are some cool drawings and some great pictures.
Yep. But, you know, the scary thing is there are a lot of people on planet Earth who will buy that story long before they would believe what's written in the pages of the Bible.
That's exactly why I bring it up. Because as we have been saying for many years, and I think though there are many others in our little neighborhood, our little family of mm-hmm. online people, that we're being told over and over and over again that there are aliens. See, I really am from Eastern Kentucky. No, there be aliens up there in them hills. No, there are aliens up in the space around us, that there are lots and lots of worlds, that there are many, many other populated Earths, so to speak. In fact, there was just that story a few days ago about the
first
planet
planet
looked like, you know, of course, it's not Earth-like at all, but, again, it's part of that meme telling us that we are not alone.
Not alone.
And we're ready for first contact.
Or may already have been contacted, because if we've got alien artifacts here on planet Earth, it could be, the iPad is signaling for your attention, we may have been planted here, seeded here by ancient aliens.
Well, that's
anything to discount the beginning of the Bible, the mm-hmm. book of Genesis, and of course that would discount the end of the Bible, because if there's no original sin, no fall from grace, there's no need for a redeemer to come back and save us.
That's right.
Which is why we need to keep building those AI devices so that we can upload into the cosmos. We'll turn the Earth into computronium.
Computronium? If only we had some atmospherium. We could do real science with it.
There is a radioactive element known as atmospherium.
This silly old meteor, as you call it, could be made of atmospherium. Do you know what that could mean for mankind?
You must find this and bring it to me.
Well, time to find a meteor.
Aliens. From outer space.
Earth contains that rarest of all radioactive elements, atmospherium.
I hope the owners don't mind their good dishes holding a radioactive meteor.
Don't eat the meteor by mistake, whatever you do.
Oh, what a world, what a world. Well, we'll be back on Friday, God willing. Feel free to
Sam's moving, so apparently
we're
done.
At the 30-minute mark. So, yes, feel free to join us on the PID Radio Cafe at Facebook to discuss these and other topics that catch your attention.
If
you dare. And until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here. We'll be right back.
Seriously, we'll clean the dishes before we go.